Welcome back to the Gains for Girls podcast. Thank you for joining us. I am super excited about today's guest. I know that I say that about every guest, but today's guest is sharing a new perspective, adding a new perspective, one that I imagine most of you haven't really considered. We have talked about this gender ideology movement and how it affects, of course, female athletes. We just had a lawyer and an NCAA official on. We've had parents, we've had coaches, we've had the sorority girls from University of Wyoming. The list goes on. But I imagine you haven't considered how this issue impacts prisoners and those women who are incarcerated in all women's facilities. Today's guest, her name is Amy Ichikawa. She is a formerly incarcerated woman herself, and now she spends her time advocating for women in these institutions and facilities and advocating for resources for them. A big issue that she has faced over the past few years, she's based out of California, if that tells you anything, is men self-identifying as women and getting into women's prisons and how this affects women. I actually got to meet Amy in New Mexico a few weeks ago. We were there advocating for a new piece of legislation called the Women's Bill of Rights, which ultimately defines and codifies the word woman and other sex-based terms. I can't even believe that this is necessary. We have to define the word woman in state statute, really federal statute, but here we are in 2024. It is necessary that we do so. But look, this bill, the Women's Bill of Rights, it's a lot broader than just protecting women's sports. Anywhere where the word woman is used in state statute, it would define this word. So it prevents unelected bureaucrats and officials from going through the back door and reinterpreting this word to mean what they want it to mean, which is what we're certainly seeing happening. And in New Mexico, for example, the word woman or female is used 2,045 times in state statute, meaning, again, 2,045 times for this word to be reinterpreted to mean what whoever wants it to mean, which we're seeing the effects of that now. So very excited to talk with Amy. Check out our interview here. Well, Amy, thank you so much for joining the Gains for Girls podcast. It is nice to see you again. We just got back from spending some time together in New Mexico, which was incredible. And to just be able to hear some of the stories you were able to tell me. Gosh, I learned so much. And so I'm super excited to talk to you today. I wanted you to just start by telling us a little bit about you and your background.
Okay, well, thank you very much for having me. I am formerly incarcerated. I served 5 years in a California state prison. I started a small organization a few years after getting out, and I pretty much dedicated my life to making sure that women in prison have the ability to rehabilitate in a space that is conducive for rehabilitation, which would be a space that's free of men. And that's what we have in common. It's really consumed. It's just everything now. It is everything.
Well, talk about outside of kind of the gender ID, the self-identification mess, what are some of the things that women specifically in prison face that are different to that of males in men's facilities?
The issues for women in women's prisons stem from the lack of dignity, the absolute disrespect, the disregard for you as a woman. It starts from the time you walk in to the time you leave, and even after that. There are so many issues with staff, sexual misconduct, the whole internalized misogyny of the system in general. You're robbed of your womanhood and femininity when you walk into the place. And we're just held to a different level of accountability than men as well. Women are stigmatized very heavily because we're not supposed to be, nobody's supposed to be a criminal. But, you know, technically, I think women are held to a much, much higher standard. You're permanently looked down upon. And I'm trying to work through it myself. We have a tendency to beat ourselves up, and it just hinders the whole rehabilitation process. So On top of all that, just being a woman, having to ask for, you know, pads or tampons. These are the kind of things that you don't think about on a daily basis, but when you're in prison, it does impact you all the time.
You had already alluded to the fact that men now are self-identifying as women and they're getting into women's prisons. You do work across the nation, but you spend a lot of your time, you're based in California. So you have seen, as you can imagine, right, in a state like California, you have seen some of the craziest things. But I guess I kind of wanted to ask you, outside of the obvious one of being housed with women, which sounds awesome to a rapist or a sexual predator or someone who's been charged with child pornography or kidnapping or any of these sexual crimes, what are the benefits to a man self-identifying as a woman and getting into women's prisons?
Safety. Definitely safety is issue number one. A large percentage of the people who are transferring are individuals who the state has a hard time keeping safe because of their status that's not trans-related. Status with the gangs, being informants, just very problematic individuals. So they're coming from these level four men's prisons that are maximum security and entering women's general population, which is completely not segregated. Women are all integrated together, security levels 1 through 4. There's serial killers and, petty thieves all living together, and it's never been a problem until now when somebody who's of the top security level is being taken off of death row or supermax men's prison and put into women's facilities in general population. It's like a kid in a candy store. And the women's prison is like an unshucked oyster. It's just waiting to be discovered because there's so many opportunities for extortion or it's a gold mine. It's a gold mine for them. That's why all these lawsuits are spinning and being created as we speak. There's a lot of money to be made in these situations. And these opportunists are going to take advantage of this opportunity as expected.
Yeah, I like that you use the word opportunist because I think that's a lot of what this movement is. And look, that's not me trying to water down someone who genuinely has gender dysphoria, whatever that might look like. But there are opportunists, and that is what the systems that we have in place, we're allowing ourselves to be taken advantage of because of the opportunists. So I appreciate you using that word. What does this mean that the women in these all women's facilities across the nation, what does that mean that they have to now endure because of these men into their facilities?
Well, in a housing perspective, you're now completely void of any privacy or dignity. You didn't have any too much before, but it's different when you're in a cell, like in the world's largest women's prison, it's an 8-person cell. So now you're getting ready for work, you're changing, you're showering, you're using the toilet with someone who possibly is a sex offender. This is somebody who is going to be around you in the most intimate times of the day. You're now like their comfort animal. These people also have the ability to have you moved out of the cell at any given time because their own perception of their mental health, safety, and well-being has to be taken into consideration whenever any decisions are made in regards to their housing assignment, job assignment, anything like that. And these aren't rights that were taken away from a community and are being redistributed. This is stuff that nobody in prison has ever had. This is violating laws that are already on the book. No inmate can have power over another inmate. But these people now have the ability to just bust up an entire room, displace 7 other women because you want to possibly have single cell status. All of this is stuff that these women have to worry about every day now. It takes years to cultivate a group of 8 women who can live together and thrive and succeed. It takes a lot. And knowing that at any given moment, somebody could just say, I want that room and I want them all out, is got people on the edge of their seats, just hypervigilant. There's no respite from this. Just Super Bowl Sunday, they had to watch as, while they're on lockdown because there's no staff there, the plant operation staff came in to install condom and dental dam dispensers because it was really important, apparently.
All women's facilities. Now, everyone should be asking themselves, why do they need men's condoms in an all women's facility? And if you think about this and lay this out for exactly what it is, not only, because you're not supposed to have sex in prison. I mean, that's a standard, right? I mean,
right. It is. They got a memo that states, you know, sexual relations and sexual activity is still prohibited under any circumstances, but you know, we're still going to provide this. It's always, for many years, they've been provided in the men's prisons because there's different, you know, activities and lifestyles that are taking place in there. They're trying to slow down the transmission of STIs. So it has never been an issue in women's prison. But since they're introducing this factor into their population, it's going to be a problem. And I think they introduced the dental downs at the same time to kind of offset the shock factor that these are freaking condoms.
Not only are they just allowing intercourse, by providing condoms, it is as if they are encouraging intercourse. And what I would imagine in many cases, encouraging rape. Because again, these are men who are convicted of sexual assault crimes. Do you have any stats? Like, obviously, I think it's pretty well known, women on average, right? The percentage of those who commit sexual battery or sexual crimes, of course, it's much higher for that of men. What is that? Do you have any kind of stat that would relay that?
It's like this and this now. But technically, even within the men's statistic, I think their sex offender rate is 17% for general population. And for the transfers, just the transfer requesting people to women's prison, it's 33.8%. So this is a really undeniably large concentration of sex offenders that is trying to gain access to the women's prison, of whom 92% are battered and beaten women. It is rare to have female sex offenders. They do exist, but the way the law was written, if anyone in the prison of the selected gender has ever had any conviction that are related to a transfer's conviction, then it clears the way. So one sex offender, female, it opens this whole door up to serial rapists, you know, people with the most heinous sex crimes.
Again, just to reiterate, these staff members worked overtime on Super Bowl Sunday when everyone is distracted, right? There's no media attention going on here. Everyone's focused on the Super Bowl. They worked overtime to come into all women's facilities and install condoms and dental dams. I was reading about a prison in New York, again, all women's facility, that has posted placards talking about pregnancy prevention. What are the numbers, again, being in California, what are the numbers look like? Like, how many men are transferring to women's prisons? And I think almost more importantly, how many women who self-identify as a male apply to get into men's prisons?
I believe the CDCR website said that about maybe 11 trans men have tried to transfer, but I know that there's only been one who has been allowed to transfer, and they had maybe 3 months left to do, and they were sent to a men's prison, and there were no complaints. I think the conduct of the people that are in the men's prison is a little bit different than the people who are transferring over. The dangers are not the same because they're sending all the predators to the women's prison. The ones who are the opportunistic, manipulative people that you would want to protect individuals from are being prioritized in all of this and protected and given so much power over the whole system. When the police are afraid of you because of your lawyers, there's a huge disconnect. Like, how do you function in this environment knowing that there's no consequences for these people? They're not going to get in trouble for anything, and you're going to be penalized for even questioning the validity or the legalities of this practice. It's really intense.
I think a common misconception is that we think this is only happening in blue, liberal, left-leaning states. Can you provide any insight as to where across the country is this happening?
From coast to coast, honestly, this is federal law as well. So if you have a women's federal prison in your state, which you do, it's happening there. Some of the most heinous, horrible, heartbreaking reports are coming out of Texas. There's a minimum or a medium security women's prison that several women were victimized by a post-op trans person who was actually transferred after assaulting all of them and released. No charges were filed. Women were denied medical attention. And this is Texas. You would never think. I was really shocked to think that this was happening in Texas. But it's all over the place. It's not just here. It's Canada. It's anywhere women are in cages. This is currently happening.
Yeah, speaking of kind of globally here, J.K. Rowling tweeted this morning, I believe she was commenting on a policy that's just been released in Scotland. But what she said, I think it's amazing that she's talking about it. She said, those male prisoners currently held alongside women include those convicted of murder and torture and those with intact male genitalia. And then goes on to say that this policy is trampling over the rights of incarcerated women. And that the aim is to increase the possibility for male prisoners who identify as transgender to have access to women in prison. And this blatantly sees women as providing a service of validation and of object and as objects. And then further goes on to say that they're doing this. This policy is committed in total secrecy. So it's pretty amazing to have a woman and an advocate like J.K. Rowling on your side. What about, I guess, We've obviously talked about these men wanting to, and J.K. Rowling did as well, wanting a hold of these women and to get access to these women. What about women being impregnated by these men?
Well, like you said with the signage in New York, there's similar signage in California they've never publicized it before. This was right after the transfer started. In the medical building, they posted posters that say what your options are should you become pregnant during incarceration. Option number one being a Plan B pill, number two, abortion, number three, connection with a social worker to start the adoption process. This was never been a problem before, clearly, because women don't have penises. So there were two abortions last year that I'm aware of, and I have the Public Information Request Act responses. I believe there's, to my knowledge, someone pregnant right now. And one of the pregnancies last year was from the same alleged perp, the same person. There's this plot, I think James O'Keefe discussed it with in an expose he did in Washington State. There's a scam called the $1 million baby scam, and people are linking up, connecting to intentionally get pregnant for profit, for lawsuits, for settlement. So this is the kind of sinister plotting and manipulating that's taking place because of this type of legislation. This is what this has done, pregnancy for profit.
Yeah, I've heard of stories out of New Jersey, Kansas, Ohio, of course, in California, of women being impregnated. The list goes on. So I guess my question for you is, you mentioned legislation and some different things. What can we do as everyday people to one, spread awareness that this is happening, because I think a lot of people don't even know that this is an issue. To spread awareness, and what can we do ultimately to help stop what's happening?
I think these kind of difficult conversations are where it starts. Having to talk to someone about something so awkward and unbelievable as housing rapists in a woman's prison is a game changer. And over the last couple of years, I've realized that I get a lot farther by investing in these conversations. It encourages other people to do their research, and I think it's been pretty productive. But outside of these uncomfortable conversations, I think checking your own state's legislation to see what's on the book in regards to the housing of trans-identified prisoners. And if it's the same, which more than likely it is, contacting your state reps, letting them know, this, are you aware of this? Did you read this bill from the top to the bottom? Do you know that there's fully intact predatory males being forcibly housed in the women's facilities? Let them know, this is a big deal. Supporting the Women's Bill of Rights in your state is huge, because if we had definitions in the law like we think there are, it would be greatly, greatly impactful. There are no definitions in this legislation. It's so nuanced, and there's so huge of a gray area that it just opens everything up for this kind of insanity and unbelievable situation. So contacting your state reps that are supposed to be representatives of, they're supposed to reflect your beliefs, not an ideology, not a movement, but what the constituents want. And if you are not cool with housing men and women's prison, then you got to tell them, because they're not doing their job, right?
Yeah, it's wild that in the nearly 250-ish years we've been established as a country, of course, we don't have a definition for the word woman, because we've never struggled to define the word woman. Yet here we are in 2024, where I would argue not only is it necessary that we define the word woman, it is urgent that we define the word woman, which is a testament to where we are as a nation right now, which is a pretty scary thought. But Amy, what can we do to support you and the work that you do? Because you are on the ground, on the front lines of this. You are in and out of the prisons. You are talking to the women who are incarcerated. Being someone who's formerly incarcerated yourself, how can we support you specifically in the work that you're doing?
Well, we can always use stamps. We send a lot of mail. I know it sounds small, but postage is increasingly expensive every single year. And we send a lot of mail out. We do our best to keep people abreast on new legislation that will impact their lives. And our newsletter, we send it out, you know, once a month. And we're in regular correspondence with everybody else. I mean, cars and money would be great too, but in the meantime, stamps are awesome. We aren't formally funded. I think I've really prioritized the immediate needs of the women inside, and I'm working backwards to kind of come to where we should be to be able to support ourselves and continue to do the work that we do. If anybody has great skills in accounting or wants to help with, I don't know, creating an infrastructure with us, that would be welcome also.
What's your website? What's the website people can visit?
It is www.womaniiwoman.org. II for two, for like Roman numerals. And there's so much that you can check out there. And there's different ways you can help and specifically give to areas that you want to support.
Love it.
Yeah.
Well, it's amazing the work you're doing. It is our job. I think people forget, right? I think we rely on the government to do the right thing. But what a naive thought to wait for these people to do the right thing unprovoked. It is our job to hold their feet to the fire, to hold them accountable, to call out the hypocrisy. Our job as Americans, our job as consumers, whatever state you live in, it is our duty as the people. And we have the power to make these changes, but it's up to us to exercise our rights to ensue these things get done. So, Amy, we are so grateful for you and for everything that you're doing. We are looking forward to, hopefully we can have you back on sometime soon and get some updates.
Thank you. Thank you very, very much.
Make sure you check out womaniiwoman.com. Again, Amy's organization, the work that she is doing to provide resources and support to those women who are incarcerated, especially how they're being impacted by men self-identifying as women and getting into their facilities. Crazy stuff. Thank you guys for joining. Make sure you like and subscribe anywhere where you get your podcasts. You can check us out at outkick.com. Last week, I mentioned Covenant Rescue Group. This is a group that is dedicated to ending child sex trafficking and exploitation. The work they do is phenomenal. Make sure you check them out at covenantrescuegroup.com. Please support them in any way that you can. We will see you all next week. Thanks for watching.